America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Back. It's Inside Boxing Live. We're presented by PPV.com. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri coming to you off the heels of Boots Ennis destruction. We had some U.S. boxing. We were hungry for it as boxing fans. We haven't had a fight here in the States in quite a while, but it was a big one, and Boots made a huge, huge statement. Chris, how are you doing, my friend? How's everything going?
I'm good. Aside from Boots going out there and doing what he's supposed to do, I'm really happy that a main event ended in one round so I can go to sleep early, because these long, long, late nights watching main events that don't live up, it's nice to have a fight that did live up, and Boots went out there and did what was expected of him and some.
Yeah, the pay-per-view, it wasn't a pay-per-view. I'm thinking of PPV.com. It was in the ring by 11 p.m. Eastern. I'm not trying to sound like two old heads here on this podcast, but I think that's very important to do that. And I think more promotions should take note of that. That wasn't the biggest thing to come from this fight. Before we get into everything, this episode is brought to you by PPV.com. That's our proud presenting sponsor. Fandora versus Thurman, unfortunately, has been scratched due to a hand injury from Fandora that we'll touch on later in the show. That was going to be streaming on PPV.com, will be streaming on PPV.com when they come up with another date. Thurman put out a video yesterday, and it's looking like January. I know that Pacquiao has a January 24th date. I don't know this for sure, but we could potentially see a Pacquiao versus TBA Rolly, and then a Thurman Fandora doubleheader. And that would be streaming on PPV.com to your phone, tablet, any device, live interactive chat with me, Chris, in there, Lance Pugmire, some others will be joining the cast, I believe, to provide the best live experience for boxing. That is PPV.com. So Boots gets the job done. Goes in there for one round, 2 minutes, just destruction. Drops
three knockdowns.
Wisma Lima, who I was thinking, wow, this guy on paper, southpaw, looks durable, big. Is coming off of four straight wins over undefeated opponents in their backyards. All right, 7 through 12. I think Boots will get it done, but 7 through 12. Oh man, was I wrong? Big statement from Boots. It is a statement because this is what you're supposed to do with a C level fighter, and Lima was a C level fighter. Boots fought Stanionis, who I consider a B level fighter, and look what he did to him. Beat him inside of 6 or 7 rounds. Will he get an A-level fighter? That's the main discussion, and that's the main talking points after the fight. But Boots did what he was supposed to do. Was Lima not really up to the task? Of course. But if he struggled, we'd be criticizing the hell out of this kid. But he didn't. He went in there and took him out.
Yeah, and there was a lot of criticism for the selection of this opponent. But whatever. You do what you do with what you got in front of you. And Boots did that. Just like you said, like if he had struggled, if this had went rounds, if you know he had even lost rounds, there would have been critics up and down. But that didn't happen. And he went out there and absolutely demolished this man. Three knockdowns in one round. Pretty much the first punch he landed had him hurt and down on the canvas. So he did what he was supposed to do with what he had in front of him. We say that over and over again. But the hype is real now. The hype went to stellar heights last night because of how it went down. So it could have gone either way, right? If this was an actual fight, the criticism would have been there, but it wasn't. So now it's gone the complete other way. So now we are light years ahead with hype.
The hype is real. The hate is also there too, because this guy has a lot of hate. I mean, I use social media as a way to gauge the fans, and a lot of my replies were, I'm not impressed. This, who did he fight? All who fights is tune-ups, and he's a mechanic, and he loves tune-ups, which is actually kind of a good burn.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah, that was a good one. But like, no one believes in him, and that's just because of what he's done over the first 6 years, 7 years of his career, where we've heard nothing but hype, and we haven't gotten a big fight out of Boots. The Stanionis fight was arguably the biggest fight of his career, which came in his last fight, and he passed that with flying colors. You know, good wins, but nothing like of no nothing to match what Eddie was saying afterwards and what a lot of his supporters would say. But going back to that sequence, just to use your eyes. Like, we say this all the time on the show. Like, use your eyes in there. We have some of the best listeners. We have some of the best viewers that can see raw talent. Like, you cannot deny the raw talent and just the skills. He just looks different in there. That uppercut was phenomenal. Like, the way that he can get all the leverage behind his shots, he stepped back. It was like a sequence where it almost was – he wasn't switching stances, because I went back and watched it a few times. Like, you can speak on this way better than me. It's like he gives himself so much space, which, you know, he's willing to do that because he knew that, first of all, nothing was coming back. But that's the thing with Boots. He'll stick his nose in there in order to be a spectacular offensive fighter. But that uppercut, I watched it over and over and over. It was something special.
Yeah, I mean, you said it perfectly. He puts his chin on the line to get the knockouts. You know, there's that old saying in baseball, it's the home run hitters got the most strikeouts, right? Because they're taking chances, mm-hmm. they're going for it. And Boots does that. And that's why the hype is there, because everyone sees that he's willing to go for it. Where a lot of guys will fight safety first. That's not Boots. He put his chin right on the line against a southpaw straight left hand for that first knockdown. When he threw that right uppercut that caught him, they were exchanging at that time. He punches with you. And to do that in the first round, man, that takes balls. You don't know how this guy's gonna hit, and you're gonna take your lead hand versus his power backhand, and you're gonna win out. That's from a fighter's perspective, that's super impressive.
Yeah, he has the goods, and I get it. Like, Lima, C-level fighter, ranked, I can't believe he was in the top 10, and I think it was the WBA, because now Boots is a WBA, it was a WBA title eliminator, which means something. I think from reading some of the boxing scene and whatnot, that the winner now, which is Boots, would face Abbas Barao, who beat Taez. Back in, I want to say that was August. I was on the call for that one. And that's what this means. Like, Boots has a title shot now with the WBA. Should he go that route? Obviously, there's a ton of other routes. That's what this fight was all about. It ended so fast, and it drove it into overdrive. Our friends over at DAZN were foaming at the mouth. Sergio was going ballistic. Todd Grisham. Yeah. Love Todd. And Todd is the ultimate ball buster. I'm going to bust Todd's balls right now. As Boots is laying it on Lima, the final exchange to end the fight, Grisham's like, maybe he is the best fighter ever. I was like, what? Like, we've been there. You've been ringside calling fights. You get caught up in the crowd. You get caught up in the hype. Todd, come on. We love you, bro. Best fighter ever?
Yeah, Todd gets away with a lot because he's just such an affable guy, and he's the man. That's my boy. Yeah, a little overexcited, sure. And what happens with a big first round knockout in that way? But I think we can all kind of cool down now. We could bring the temperature down on the hype again. What he had in front of him, again, what we've seen in the past from Boots in recent form. You know, there's a lot of drama around him. And you mentioned that there's a lot of hate for him. A lot of it's warranted because of how he moved before he exited 147. But listen, we're all looking forward now. It's full steam ahead on the Boots train. So let's talk about the next fights. Let's get him going. Let's get him moving. This is the deepest division in the sport. And there's a lot of great opposition and great opponents for him to step it up and really show what he's got. Because you're not going to get everything out. You're not going to get the truth behind Boots from a guy like Lima. You're going to get that when you see him against the guys that are in this division, the Virgil Ortizes, the Sebastian Fundoras, even like a faded older Keith Thurman or Brandon Charlo. Adams, who's been on a run. Charlo would be more name recognition just because of his past, but he's been so inactive. And you know, this is boxing. What have you done for me lately? And lately he was abysmal fighting Canelo Alvarez. So I think there's a lot more risk versus reward type fights that are out there for Boots, but let's see what happens next.
Yeah, Boots Virgil is the fight. It was talked about in leading up to this fight. It was Eddie Hearn was using it as a talking point for the promotion. It's been done. It's promoting 101. Eddie was on one too. I mean, good God, like he earned his paycheck last night. He was on fire. And usually I am a guy that will grade Eddie fairly. Like if when he's on, and I think he's an overall asset to the sport, there are times where I find him to be just so annoying. And I would say that to his face too. Like he knows it. He's a used car salesman. He's told me that in a video, an interview we did together. But last night he was putting it in overdrive in the post-fight interview, saying he's the best. He'll destroy Virgil Ortiz. Best fight there is to make in America. We're going to 154, 160, 168, and we're going to the Capitol. And he was just going crazy. And I love that because I could tell that Eddie is extra motivated now with Dana White in the fold. And he just did his job last night. And boxing needs that. And boxing needs American stars. So I will buy into the hype. And I will say, all right, Booch, you made a lot of mistakes. You and your team in the past. Past is the past. U.S. boxing needs stars. We need Boots Ennis to shine. We need Shakur Stevenson to be great. Teofimo. Tank Davis is off doing what he's doing. But we need Abdullah Mason's of the world, Emiliano Vargas is like boxing in the U.S. needs this. So Boots is at that age of 28 and at the precipice of becoming a star, I believe, with Eddie, a re-energized Eddie. So I did like that. But Boots versus Virgil is now on overdrive and Matchroom's side is applying all the pressure. They maintain that their side is ready and it's all on Virgil. But Virgil versus Boots is interesting because neither have a title, but it is the best fight you can make in American boxing and the best fight you can make at 154. Boots has the edge in raw skills, but Virgil has been through the fire with competition, better competition. Madrimov, Boachuk, now Lubin. How do we see this fight playing out between Virgil and Boots?
There's a lot of factors in this fight, and you laid it out nicely. Virgil's a machine. I mean, he pumps the jab. He's got a killer left hook to the body. He's super durable. Even though we saw him go down against Boachuk, he came right back and got up and went right back into the fold, right back into the fire, excuse me. And Boots, you know, he's got all the physical talent, the raw gifts. He's also technically, he understands what he's doing in there. His style is so fluid and athletic. It's funny. If I was going to say what kind of style would beat Boots, it would be a Virgil Ortiz type guy who's very fundamentally sound, physically strong, puts on a lot of pressure, keeps the pressure as a great gas tank. But then if you ask me vice versa, what kind of style would beat Virgil Ortiz, I would say a boot style, a very athletic, defensively savvy at times, and a puncher that hits you with shots that you don't see. So it really is a great matchup between two guys whose styles mesh in a way that you're like, man, I don't have an answer because I can see both scenarios playing out. Regardless, that's the kind of fights that we need. Young guys fighting in their primes with conflicting, clashing styles. This fight's gangbusters no matter what.
Isn't it crazy that they neither have a title? It's not a title fight.
Who cares? Who cares? They're both American stars. They're both super talented. Both, Ennis has already been a world champion, a two-time world champion, or two belt world champion, excuse me. And Virgil, as good as he is not held a title yet, which is crazy.
But he's regarded as number one. Like you go to the ring rankings.
Rightfully so.
I know that those aren't everything, but we do use those. The Ennis is number one, despite not being a belt holder. You have some Ortiz. Ortiz is number one, despite not being a belt holder. Ennis used the eye test, and you can say, wow, this guy's very talented. It was his first fight at 154, but you could throw him right into the deep waters. Like, you know, Barao, Fandora, Murtazalayev, Zayas, Conwell, Charlo, anyone coming up from 147? Am I missing someone at 154? Tejas, am I ready to write him off yet? But Boots is right up there. But it's a very, very interesting fight because it kind of, you know, with this all this talk about belts and how much belts matter now, and with Zuffa coming in at WBC saying our belt means a lot, it is a little refreshing to say, like, we don't need a belt to make a fight. Only because, like, it Virgil should be a title holder by now. Yes. At 154. He has been bitten by the boxing politics. He's been bitten by the injury bug just as much as Ennis has had his trip-ups in his career, too. So don't necessarily need a belt to know that it's the best fight. I think fans can recognize it. I do agree with Eddie that it's the biggest fight you can make in U.S. boxing right now.
Totally.
Is there any, maybe like Tank Shakur, but that ship has long sailed. There's no one in heavyweight. You know, Crawford Boots, man. We were robbed of Crawford Boots at 147.
Yes, yes. And that would have been, I mean, Boots with any of those guys. Boots and Spence before the Crawford fight. Boots and Crawford at that time. You know, these were awesome fights. And a lot of people might look at that like, it's kind of too early for Boots. Is it though? The guy has 30 plus wins. You know, he's 27. You know, that he would have been 25, 26. Damn. Dude, the greats of old all fought each other before 25. We're on a different timeline now for some reason where we got guys who are amassing massive records against guys that no one's heard of or faded champions or former contenders. It's not the way anymore. We got to have these guys fight earlier when they're in their primes, when they're both hungry, when they have that youthful exuberance and animosity towards each other. You know, hopefully that will change moving forward with the way that the sport is shifting. But I don't know. But regardless, we got what we have right here. Boots is a monster, and I want to see him with all of the other monsters of this division. I got the Box Rec rankings up right now. You've got Jaron Ennis 35-0, Murtaza Aliyev 23-0, Xander Zayas 22-0, Virgil Ortiz 23-0. They're all undefeated. Fight each other. I don't care about the O's. I want guys to fight each other. If you fight the best, you're going to lose. Okay, so what? Keep fighting. We got to get past these O's. There's too many champions in a weight class that are undefeated, not fighting each other. That's ridiculous.
Well, not only is there too many, like the undefeated aspect, and I think boxing is slowly getting away from that, but it's not completely gone. That still means something. I think more than anything, it's like we have four champions at 154, but all four of them fight for different promoters. Abbas Barrow is the WBA titleist. I saw him at the Tank Jake Paul press conference, told me he's a free agent, willing to sign with just about anybody. Fundora is with PBC. Bakram Atarzalayev is in the witness protection program. This guy hasn't fought in a year. Bro, he fought 1 year ago is when he beat Thurman. Excuse me. He beat Zoo.
Zoo.
1 year ago. I remember it was during the Yankee playoff run of last year. Like, that's how I remember things. But yeah, Bakram, completely career comes to... When does a guy win a world title and your career comes to a screeching halt? Only in boxing.
When you look too good and you're a nightmare style to fight. He's
you're
a
not
bad
marketable.
Boy. And you're not marketable. You're not from this country. Your English is not great. He's got someone handling his Twitter feed for him. That's kind of interesting but weird. But also, you got to look at his age. He's 32. Are these guys aging him out? 33 is when things start to get a little funky. 33, 34, age starts to creep up. You know, all these other guys are really young. Ennis is 28. Xander Zayas, 23. Virgil's 27. Fundora, 27. It's a young weight class full of lions. Are they aging out the older guy? You know, not that 32 is old per se, but that's right around where age starts becoming a factor.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't even seen him do like an interview. Like, he hasn't done anything. If I was him, I know he has a good team. Like, I'm pretty sure he was formerly with Main Events. Jolene Mazzone. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Jolene, yep.
She's
awesome.
Great.
She's the best.
She's badass. Anyone that knows her, she's something else. But she manages Bakram or is involved with him. And so, you know, it's hard. It's really hard. And he should be doing interviews. Like, if I was him, I would be at this fight. Yes. Maybe you have to go into your own funds to go to Philly. Just show up and just be like, bro, I have a title here. Is he WBA, one of them, IBF? I have a title. Come on. This is the hottest division. But it's interesting because I would say the top two in the division that you just like are, in my opinion, Ennis and Virgil. Neither have belts.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what the answer for Murtaza Aliyev is. I don't see anyone stepping up to fight him either. I think we're probably gonna see Ennis and Barrow in all honesty. I think that's what we see. Which is not going to help Ennis in terms of name recognition because people don't know who Barrow is. They don't know how dangerous he is. He's a problem. Barrow. He's a really tough out
problem,
for anyone, bro. Anyone in the weight class. So that's one of those fights where you're going to get a title, but you have a real risk of not looking spectacular against a guy like him. And then again, the criticisms of Boots are going to continue, but at least he'll be a titleist in the division if he is to get the victory, which I do favor him in that fight. I don't think we're going to see Ortiz next. I'm sorry. I'm being pessimistic. I don't think we see that next. I think there's just too many moving parts for that. I know that Ennis called him out in the ring immediately after. I've spoken to Robert Garcia And you just see the way that Virgil moves. He will fight anybody. He wants all the smoke. He wants the baddest guys in the division today. So I don't think there would be a problem between the fighters making the fight. But I don't know if the powers that be are going to let that happen yet without letting it marinate a little more before the money can be humongous.
I think Hearn is doing a really good – I think what Hearn is doing is very smart. They're putting a shit ton of pressure on Ennis' side and putting Oscar on the defensive. And Oscar has shown
on Ortiz's side, you mean, putting the pressure on Ortiz.
I keep fucking that up. Yes. They're putting a lot of pressure
it's
on Ortiz.
It's Sunday morning, guys. Dan's.
I had coffee, too, and I got a good night's sleep. I don't know what the heck. I think that Eddie.
That's your problem. That's your problem. You slept too good.
Yeah, I know. I got to be a little more rugged and a little more tired. Eddie and Matchroom's side and Boots' side are putting a shit ton of pressure on Oscar and Virgil, rightfully so. They're putting them on the defensive. They're saying, hey, we signed it. We're ready. Well, you got to beat Lubin, number one, which is not, you know, we've seen this happen in boxing numerous times.
Not an easy fight. It's not an easy fight.
Lubin can go in there and upset Virgil or can stun him with something easily. I still think Virgil will win, but I like what Eddie and Matchroom are doing. And Oscar has shown over time, it's like they kind of gets called on his bluffs a little, you know, at times, where Virgil is one of, if not the biggest chip at Golden Boy, and they do not have a lot of champs. They don't have a lot of assets. They have to really be careful how they move their fighters. And Virgil has been pretty clear that he wants to win a title because he's close. You know, he's beat Madrimov. He's beat Boachuk, who are not titleless, but they're guys that are like right at the top. And he's looking at Boots like, what do you have for me besides money? Like, what do you offer me? Like, you Boots needs Virgil more than Virgil needs Boots. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I do. I do agree with that. And I just want to give my flowers to Eddie Hearn, who's being an actual promoter.
Like, he's killing it.
Promoters don't promote. It's such a misnomer. When I try to explain to people how boxing the business works, and they say promoter, like what does that mean? They don't understand what that actually means because they really don't promote. But Eddie's doing a fantastic job of actually promoting his man. And you said that you know he's really stepping it up because of Dana White. I don't think so. I think he's been really chomping at the bit for this kind of victory from Ennis, so he can scream from the rooftops, "I have the best fighter in the world." He said that after the Chukadzian fight, that it wasn't the performance that he wanted.
Shout out Karen, 24 rounds with Boots.
Yeah, Karen's a badass. He's another one. He's a difficult out. But after that fight, which was you know that horrible interview with Boots, and he was very you know whimsical and unsure of what he was going to do, and kind of like out of it kind of thing. And then even Eddie, like he was deflated. It was like you just kicked this puppy. He was just like, I really wanted to get out here and tell everyone I have the best fighter in the world.
Yeah, what he
I
did
can't
last
do that. I can't do that on the heels of this performance. Last night, he got that performance that he's been wanting, and he didn't hold back at all. So I tip my hat to Eddie doing a great job promoting this young man who does need to be promoted. Because Ennis, as good as he is, as good as he passes the eye test, like you said, the guy cannot talk. He can't speak it into existence about how good he is. Or you listen to him speak, and it doesn't make you want to see him fight. You're just
no,
like,
it doesn't.
All right, I mean, this guy it's not can everything. Fight, but. No, it's not everything. It's not everything. But you understand this, Dan. It's a big part of this, too.
Oh,
and one aspect about this matchup, if you're going to do the Ennis-Ortiz fight or the Ortiz-Ennis fight, neither one of those guys are great talkers. Ortiz isn't a bad talker. He's just kind of like, whatever, dude, let's fucking fight. That's the way that
Ortiz...
Yeah, but
Oscar and Eddie are
going
to...
That's exactly my point. You read my mind, Dan. Oscar and Eddie going head-to-head at those press conferences is going to sell the fight. Which is awesome because you got two guys who can really, really, really fight. And then you got two promoters who can really, really, really talk and who don't like each other. I that buildup will be amazing, which is why I don't think it's going to be next. I do think we're going to get it at some point. But that whole press tour is going to be phenomenal for that matchup.
Yeah, I think there's an appetite for – for just a real fight. I think fans are really looking for something like that, like – build it like an 80s type of fight, like not a lot of talk, you know, let like the Don Kings of the world and Arams, which is now the new age Eddie to a certain degree and Oscar. But to Eddie, yeah, I think there's a lot of things that I think he's showing that he's like a very competitive guy. And like this guy travels all over the world. He has a shit ton of money. He's super famous, but he's still willing. And I really think he really loves the sport. I do respect that about Eddie Hearn, and we'll give it to you straight on this show. I respect Eddie Hearn for what he's doing. I think boxing needs it right now, and I do, to a certain degree, believe he's going on Ariel's show, and he's talking, Not talking nicely about Dana White. A year ago, he had a way different tone about Dana. They were respectful toward each other. You know, Eddie Hearn said he's the best to do it in MMA, and Dana would say Eddie's the best to do it in boxing. Not anymore, because Eddie is now looked at as competition for – excuse me. Dana's not looked at as competition for Eddie, and that could help. But just like any fighter, like you need motivation, and Eddie's – you know, he's looking for that edge. But last night he was really on one. And
we need competition, though. We need the competition between these promoters. We want
I don't want this monopoly to come through.
It's exactly my point. That's exactly my point. Without competition, it becomes a monopoly. And then you're getting fed whatever they want to give you.
You get diluted Eddie Hearn. Imagine, whatever. You know, we'll make the fight eventually. That's what you get in the UFC. It's like Aspinall is not fighting John Jones. Like they're just beaten down to the point where it's just like, whatever. What's the motivation for them to do that?
Managers and promoters don't matter. I mean, there are no promoters. There's one promoter. They don't matter. They can't sell their asset. The fighters have to do it themselves, and not everybody's built like that. Look at a guy like Ennis. In that world, how does he sell himself to get those next fights if he's not acting like Conor McGregor? You know, and that's how you have to be a star in that scenario. But in boxing, we're not like that. We have promoters who are competitive. I love that Eddie's like young and virile. Like he wants to make these fights. He gets out there, and he's a great promoter for someone who doesn't have a voice the way that Ennis is, and he can make these fights. So does Oscar to a degree. And those guys pitted against each other might make these fights happen because, listen, I got the best guy in the world. No, I got the best guy in the world. Cool, let's prove it.
Yeah, and I 100% agree. And I really think that, there is a case to make that fight. But if they do Barao versus Boots, I know there's going to be a lot of fans out there like, who the heck is this guy, even though he just had one of the upsets of the year, fight of the year. Go back and watch the Tejas fight. It was an awesome fight. And that's a good step up next for Boots. I know it's not going to, because he's here now in terms of hype, but it's a title fight. So he beats Barao, he has a title, and then therefore unification could come next. So if the Ennis fight falls by the wayside, at least Boots can look towards Zayas, he can look towards Bakram, he can look towards Fundora, where he should be there too. So it's interesting to see in a few weeks if Virgil gets past Ennis, which I think he will do, and if they'll make that fight. I think they have as much as Eddie.
Virgil
wants
gets past.
What is wrong with me?
Lubin. Coffee, another coffee. Let's go. Espresso.
Chris is. Am I having like a stroke or something? Like, what is going on?
did you have a stroke this morning and not realize it?
What's that smell? God. Yeah. Is this a lot of names?
I'm on it. Don't worry. I got you. I got you.
You're self-correcting because usually it's the comment section. Like, Dan fucked this up big time. Like, I had a massive mess up after the Mayweather and Crawford debate. And I apologize, everybody. I will be better. We'll see, because I think that Eddie also, he does have Turkey behind him, and as much that partnership is still strong. With Eddie's smart, man. Like, he's going after Dana, but he's still aligning himself with Turkey because, you know, Turkey's got the money, and at the end of the day, you want your promoters to take care of the fighters. And another thing, too, is what I wanted to get to. Not that this is an Eddie Glaze fest here, but I don't really ever see fighters say anything bad about the guy. Like, Shakur, like, speaks highly
Chris
of him.
Chris Eubank Jr.
Well, yeah, there's something deep rooted there. But most of the fighters really like the guy, and why wouldn't you? Like last night, like it was insane. Like Shakur speaks very highly of him. Obviously, Joshua, you know, has never left his side his entire career. So you know that means something. Where you know you can hear a lot of bad things about promoters, and you know every promoter has their warts. I'm not saying that Eddie's perfect, but he's definitely like, if there was a power ranking of promoters right now, he would be at the top because he's doing his thing right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's ebbs and flows to every career, promoters included. I mean, their careers are much longer. But yeah, no, when especially with what's going on right now and how much money is around, fighters love getting paid. When your promoter's making your bank account swell, a lot of nice things to be said.
Well, he said it in an interview with Helwani. He's like, I am not afraid to say that I work for Turki Alsik. Like, he even went as far as in a different interview to say that I do shine his shoes. Yeah, I do. Because you know why? It makes my fighters money. And I it's a crazy line. I don't think a lot of fighters, promoters would say that because of the egos. But, you know, he also, when he was going at Dana White, said that this is not, Canelo Crawford was not a Dana White vehicle. That was a Turki promotion. Well, so he knows.
That was obvious from anyone who had their eyes open, but
he knows where his bread's buttered. It got me thinking about like this, these jumps, right? Terrence Crawford has jumped multiple weight classes. And I started thinking about other fighters that can do that, because Eddie also said that he would like to see Boots go from 147 to 154 to 160 to 168. You know, he didn't go as high as that, but that's four divisions. And we've seen Crawford do that as well. And we've seen Crawford go multiple divisions. And it got me thinking about, you know, it's kind of a copycat sport where now we're seeing guys fighting out of their weight classes and stuff. Could a Boots jump up to 168 tomorrow and beat a top five contender? It's interesting to see, like kind of Crawford did with Canelo. But it got me thinking about who else can jump weight classes like that? Who else can end their career as a four or five division champion? And I got a few names. Inoue comes to mind. He already has done it in four divisions. Right. So if Inoue goes to 126, would be his fifth weight division. And there's a big Hall of Fame discussion going on right now between Triple G. And it's so hard in boxing because there's no benchmarks. Right? In baseball, you get 3,000 hits, 500 home runs, you're in the Hall of Fame. I believe if you the two division is sick, right? Being a two division weight champion is freaking awesome. Three division, mm-hmm. you're elite. Four, you're in another stratosphere. Five, you're De La Hoya, Pacquiao, Crawford. Inoue is the guy that I think can go to five off the top of my head.
Yeah, Inoue, I think Bam Rodriguez has a lot left in him in terms of weight classes. How many weight classes has he been in now? Three.
What's his cap though? 126.
22 or 26. Yeah.
He's so short.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely smaller than Inoue. He does get heavy in between fights, though. But you know,
how many has he won already, Bam?
I think he's already won three.
Damn, he's so good.
He is so good. And I don't even know if we've seen his best, which is crazy to say.
Eddie's Bam, got him too.
Bam definitely on that list. Ennis is on that list for sure.
How about Benavidez?
David Benavidez, we've seen him
ending his career at heavyweight.
He's talked about it. I don't know if the modern crop of heavyweight is really possible, though.
Well, the heavyweight for him would be years from now. David Benavidez, Moses Atauma.
Yeah, but the guys are just getting bigger, dude. They're just, I don't know. This modern crop of heavyweights are just so big and athletic. It's a really tough. I think cruiserweight will be really tough for him.
He's talking about it.
Yeah, no, I think we'll see it, and I think he'll do it. You know, I think it was really eye-opening when he said he cannot go back down to 168, even if it was Canelo, which shows you that
finally.
Probably says that 75 is probably not easy for him either.
Dude, so, finally, Benavidez. It's like every interview with him, I've done it too, I'm guilty of it. So you bring up Canelo, and he'll go for the bait, and he'll give you a great soundbite. Like, Canelo's a pussy.
That's why you stupid media people do that, because you're trying to get that bite. And
yeah, when they give it to you, it's like, yes, give it to me. Yeah,
you know you're going to get it from. But it was like a guarantee. Like I press this button and bing, I got views, because Benavidez can't keep his ire down. You know
he needs to stop, and he finally did. He did an interview with Marcos at Fight Hub, and finally seems like he's closing the book on Canelo, closing the book on 168. At 175 right now, so he's won at 168. He's won at 175, albeit a vacant title. I do believe
he's going to be there for a while, and he's going to fight some more titles exactly. For sure.
He should be at this weight class for a few years. He should get Bivol, better be if we hope. He's fighting Anthony Yard November 22nd. Cruiserweight and then heavyweight. You know, our friend Jim Lampley likes to take these leaps and bounds, and you know he was saying last year that he could see Benavidez ending his career at heavyweight, and because he's that good, he's that big, he's that affable. That would be crazy. I mean, this is like an insane segment, but it's really fun. Like 5-7 years from now, Benavidez is in his mid-30s, and he's fighting Moses Atauma, who is the king at heavyweight at that point.
I can see him finishing at heavyweight. I don't necessarily see him winning a world title at heavyweight. He's not a puncher at 75. And like when you look at like the cruiserweights who've made the jump, the Evander Holyfields, the Oleksandr Usyks, they were punchers. At Usyk was knocking people out at cruiserweight. Holyfield was knocking people out at cruiserweight. We're seeing a difference in the power of Benavidez already at 175. You know, he's a volume guy. But then again, you've got a guy like Zerto Ramirez who, what is he? He's in his third weight class, 68, 75.
Yeah.
And now he's at, and now he's at cruiser. He'll be at heavyweight for sure. He's also not a puncher, but a volume guy, and we're seeing the success he has. So maybe I just shot myself in the foot. But
well,
he's another one, though. We're mentioning multiple division guys. Zerto Ramirez is one.
Yeah, I'm looking at, like, at the top names, and yeah, there are, this is like a half-baked segment that I thought about earlier, and those are just some of the ones that came. I have another one, too, with Haney. But to Benavidez, like,
is that are we problem? Talking about... Are you baked this morning? Is that you're half-baked?
No, I'm not when baked. I've quit marijuana. I haven't smoked marijuana in years. The fact that I called it marijuana, I just made my unk status.
Unk status.
Pot.
Reefer.
Reefer madness. Benavidez, what heavyweight? What's the heavyweight picture going to look like in 5 or 7 years? Is it Benavidez versus Moses Atuma for the TKO belt? The one champion, WBC, WBA, IBF, they're all gone. I don't want to think about that.
The future hellscape that is going to be boxing.
Right, we're watching it on our Oculus headsets, and we
are not employed in boxing at all. It's just going to be AI media discussions, AI podcasts, AI commentators. AI judging.
Is that a thing?
There's not going to be any jobs anymore. It's just going to be AI doing everything. Great. Podcasting, judging.
Have you seen all the Jake Paul AI stuff?
You can't not see it, but I literally turn away on my phone.
Do you know what the story is behind that?
Please inform me.
He invested in OpenAI, who is then now working with Sora, which is the app that makes these AI videos. And he signed off to give away his name, image, likeness. As almost like an experiment in a way. He's invested in it, and also just get his freaking mug out there, which is not the worst thing for this guy considering the line of business he's in. And he's having fun with it, and they're insane, and they're endless. 1 billion views in 1 week. There's a method to this guy's madness.
The level of soul selling that is required to be popular in the modern age in 2025 is insane. Selling my likeness, my character, my everything. Just if that's not selling your soul, I don't know what.
Well, you see guys do it in college football. They sell their NIL. It's a little different, obviously. That's to make money on their name and image and likeness, which I think they were getting screwed on that for years. What Jake recognizes is, like, we're living in the internet world. He's a mass marketer. He's brilliant at that. Yes, so
absolutely.
I'll put my face out there, and you guys can make all the freaking AI things you want. Guess what? I'm invested in it, number one. Number two, you just put my face out there.
I'm making money on both ends. I'm making money before and after. Listen, the guy is a brilliant business marketing mind. There's no question.
Insane.
Yeah, it is insane. We live in an insane world.
How about Haney? He's won at 135. He's won at 140. If he beats Norman, that's three divisions. 154 out of the picture.
I don't see him at 54, no. I think he's going to have 7.
Is there someone else we're forgetting?
Teofimo Lopez, 35, 40. You can see him at, I can see him at 47.
That's three. Three divisions, great.
Three's great.
You're in like... rarefied air.
Yes, but also, can we talk about, I know we're in this era where everybody's moving up, but what about like the guys like the Bernard Hopkins who stayed in their weight class?
No, and had all no. Those offenses? Chris, don't you know the debate that's been going on?
What's that?
Triple G is not a Hall of Famer because he only stayed at 160.
So I hate that. You got a million defenses and no one gives any credit to that.
Me and Ryan Garcia got into a very civil, adult-like debate on Twitter. Excellent. No name calling. Didn't tell me to get on the goofy train. Yeah, civil.
I think you're the conductor of the goofy train at this point, so he doesn't even need to...
Listen, I respect Ryan Garcia. Yeah, he went on the Ring show, and they teed him up, and he laid down one of the dynamite type of clip in terms of what it could set off. You have Ryan Garcia commenting on the resume of Triple G and him saying that he does not belong in the Hall of Fame. The messenger, the message... The clip, it was just fodder for boxing Twitter. I fell for it. I retweeted it and said...
Well, Ryan is also a brilliant marketer, self-marketer. Brilliant. He's been good at this. Hey, man,
they brought him on the
career.
Show. He's entitled to his opinion. Boxing is all about opinions. Why shouldn't Ryan Garcia have an opinion on the sport just like we do? He's wrong. Like, Triple G is a Hall of Famer. His argument was, oh, he said to me, like, Dan, you'll just throw anyone in the Hall of Fame. This is the Hall of Fame. And I said, damn, Ryan, I wish that the voters had your mindset, because they will allow just about anyone in the Hall of Fame, because it's not what you think it is. It's not like the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's a business. They need the revenue. They need you to go to that weekend. They need fighters from all over the world to come there that weekend and bring revenue to Canastota, upstate New York, which is a rest stop. Have you been there?
Of course. Many, many times.
You mean the pilgrimage?
I used to do it every summer. I used to do it every August. Just go up God there, go to the Baseball Hall of Fame, go to the Boxing Hall of Fame, go to the Omegang Brewery up there. The beautiful upstate New York in August, in summer and fall. You can't beat it. So, yeah, that used to be an annual trip. Actually, it was my brother's birthday weekend, so we would always go up there for that.
You're a super fan.
Yes, of course.
I've been there a few times.
I'm a family of super fans.
Yeah, I've been there a few times. CompuBox, the original CompuBox computer, is there on the apron, on the Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier apron, lies the original CompuBox massive computer. I'm talking like 30, 40 pounds.
And now you've got computers in your pockets.
Yes.
Way more power than that thing.
That's insane. Now we have AI Jake Paul. And I give credit to Ryan. He went out there, made a bold opinion. Is it the right opinion? No, because to go back to your point, there should be applauded for defending your title 20 plus times and dominating. And another thing, too, we're getting sucked into this debate once again, but it's a really fun debate because it kind of links to this jumping weight class segment. You know, with Triple G, boxing is different than other sports. Like baseball, you get to play 162 game schedule. You're going to play the Red Sox 20 times. You're going to play everyone, best of the best, best face of the best, every sport, every season for the most part. Boxing, you can get frozen out of the picture. And that was Triple G's case. He just got frozen out. He didn't really get recognition until he was like 29, 30. And he didn't get the Canelo fight until he was 35. Arguably beat Canelo. I got Ryan Garcia to admit that he beat. I said, do you admit that that Triple G beat Canelo? Yes. He said yes. But his resume isn't good enough. So he beat a prime Canelo, but not good enough resume.
Yeah, I mean, does he really believe that? Or is that just, like you said, fodder for clicks?
Oh, he was debating people, dude.
Yeah, I mean, listen, again, I can debate things I don't believe as well. But
that's the hill he's going to die on? Like,
I mean, it's... Dude, the news minute's really a minute these days. So he got his clicks, so move on. But I agree.
One division, though. Absolutely.
One division, a bunch of defenses, beat good fighters, beat other champions, collected belts the right way. We were collecting heads. Having an epic trilogy with Canelo Alvarez, in which he lost two and got a draw, but I think they really should have been 1-1-1. No, I think they should have been 1-2. I had Gennady winning the first one. I had Canelo winning the second one. And obviously the third one happened way too late, but Canelo won that one.
Yeah. And that's good enough to get, I mean, the Hall of Fame it's different. The Boxing Hall of Fame, it's also different because like in most other sports, you're judged on a full career. Mm-hmm. Baseball. I'll go back to baseball, the numbers game baseball. So it's like 3,000 hits, you're in the Hall of Fame. 250 wins as a pitcher to 300 wins.
Baseball's all numbers and stats.
All numbers. Like you hit 500, like Giancarlo Stanton has had like a checkered career, a lot of injuries, a lot of bad seasons, but he's inching closer to 500 home runs. And it's almost like you're locked to get in. But
point being, did you ask Ryan if Arturo Gatti deserves to be in the Hall of Fame?
Didn't have the heart to ask him that. Didn't want to know his.
Didn't have the heart.
What about like Vernon Forrest, our friend at Boxing Scene, Eric Raskin, who I think is the best boxing writer in the game right now. Yeah, really compelling story. Vernon Forrest, is he a Hall of Famer? He had one huge win. But he also lost twice to Mayorga.
Yeah, but he was another one who was iced out. Super iced out. Really dangerous guy. Top guys weren't willing to take the risk. He had to sit on the sidelines because he didn't have the mouthpiece or the machine behind him to push him.
Which is nuts, not to interrupt you, but Al Heyman. He was Al Heyman's first client.
First client. But
Al Heyman wasn't Al Heyman.
Right. He didn't have the power there. He was working from the shadows at that point. You know, he got Vernon paid, sure. But, I mean, dude, those two fights with Shane Mosley, when Shane was Shane,
top.
Was stellar performance. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough, man. I think the Hall of Fame discussion is a really difficult one, and it's all subjective because we don't have the numbers like baseball does. There's not a guaranteed stat that gets you in, you know. And I think there's a lot of
divisions. One's cool.
The division one's cool,
but it's not the end all be all.
I like the consistency of a guy who's going to sit there and reign for a long time. Rather than the guy who's going to jump all these divisions. Because look at heavyweight. Those guys don't jump. Think about the heavyweight. You're a heavyweight champion. You're a woman.
You can't hold it against them.
Yeah.
Yeah, the divisions is interesting. Vernon Forrest is an interesting case because are we looking at one night, one special night, or – I mean, he still was a two-division titleist.
Yeah. Are you looking at potential? Are you looking at – you know, what would have been the what ifs? Can you put a guy in the Hall of Fame because of what if? Well, if he had gotten that fight, he would have won. Well, you don't know that.
Sylvester Stallone is in the Hall of Fame, bro.
Yeah, but he's a non-athlete.
Non-participant. Vinny Pazienza is in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
No knock on
him. He's another one with a lot of divisions.
Yeah, but
the multiple division thing really didn't happen until the 80s with the Four Kings. Those are the only, that's when it first kind of started. Like guys could jump weight classes. Roberto Duran.
Well, there wasn't as many divisions too, right?
That too. Like, but Roberto Duran fought in how many? You know, lightweight, welter,
up to middleweight.
I think he actually competed at 175 and then went back down. Oh. Yeah, he was still competitive at middleweight.
I was looking at Roy Jones's box rec, which I do quite
He's
often.
Another one. Jesus, yeah.
I fucking hate Sergio Pettis is at the top of it and a loss.
Ew.
Disgusting.
Ew. Disgusting.
Box rec should go in and erase some of these losses.
Yeah.
Like Tyson, Jake Paul like Tyson is at the top of Jake his list. Paul.
I think they should remove Conor McGregor from Floyd's docket. Like,
so he's 49-0.
He's 49-0. I don't recognize him as being 50-0. That's crazy.
So you got to come back now and fight Pacquiao in January. Oh. Save the PBC.
That would actually I'm for it. I'm okay with that.
Old man fight, make it more even.
Maybe the fight will be better because they're both, you know, they're both older.
Decreased motor skills and reflexes.
They're going to get hit more.
Mayweather will still beat. Mayweather is like a freak. I think he's still in good shape. Definitely still spars. Definitely still trains. Mm-hmm. I think he can step into the ring. It's like a guy stepping into the box in baseball. It could still hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. I still think Mayweather can jump in the ring with Pacquiao and make him look silly.
It's very possible. I always said this. The styles just didn't work out in Pacquiao's favor.
Tried his hardest. He had a shoulder injury, but remember? He healed it by going in the ocean.
I'm going to leave that one out there.
There was a class action lawsuit against Top Rank in Pacquiao because after the fight, he said shoulder injury, and a lot of the people felt they were cheated.
Uh-oh. Who was suing
who? So I hope everyone got their $2.50.
Wait, who sued who?
It was a class action lawsuit against Top Rank. It was like one of those, like, a couple people put together like a thing.
Every Filipino?
So, yeah, like to say world. Like, oh, he wasn't 100%. Like, I want my money back from the pay-per-view. I want, like.
No fighters ever 100%. That would be.
Gambling wasn't legal then, so it wasn't like a gambling aspect to it. Yeah. So Sebastian Fundora, Keith Thurman fight is off. We talked about it at the top. That's a bummer. Because Fulton Foster also gets postponed.
Good fight.
But now the good news is that a few of the fights that were on the 10/25 card, like Jesus Ramos Mosley Jr. is getting moved to 12/6, which is Roach Pitbull, which will be streaming on PPV.
That's not a bad fight. The Abel Ramos Shane Mosley Jr. fight. Jesus Ramos.
Abel's the uncle.
Right. Correct. Who's tough welterweight. But no, that Shane Mosley Ramos Shooter fight, that's like a sneaky fun fight.
It just leads me to believe that like the fight will be rescheduled because I heard a lot of theories out there on why this got canceled. Like they're keeping Thurman and the Thurman Fundora Fulton Foster, they're keeping as like a package deal. And I believe that, you know, they could have put Foster Fulton on 12/6. But they're not. So I at least need to believe that PBC is going to make this January card, which should have Pacquiao on it, into a big one. This is all speculation. I know nothing. I know we work with PBC, but they don't tell me much. Just reading the tea leaves. But that sucks. Like Fundora, according to Samson Lukowicz, hand injury, happened in sparring. Doctor said no, nothing for 3 weeks.
Fight is 2 weeks away. Waiting until January is crazy, but that's just the nature of the PBC right now. They just don't have enough dates. But the Thurman sucks. Fight, where Thurman isn't the one that pulled out, is wild.
Right, which is, you know, you think of the 36-year-old guy who had recently, you know, in recent years blown out his bicep. You think he would be the guy to get injured, but nope, it's the younger 27-year-old Fundora. But yeah, it's a bummer. I was looking forward to that fight and that fight week. Thurman is always great for promotion leading up to fights. Fundora, not so much, but he's a hell of a fighter. So it would have been.
I wanted to see it. Like, I wanted to see what that looked like because it's an interesting fight.
I don't know how appealing it is to the masses, that fight and matchup, but I think the boxing heads, the guys like you and I, and people who are close to the sport, they understand the abilities of Keith Thurman, even in an advanced age, and the holes in the defense of Fundora could make it interesting. So yeah, I agree with you. I'm bummed that fight's not happening.
Yeah. It will be rescheduled. Like, I've read that numerous times. I did hear that, Thurman.
We'll see. We'll see, Dan. I don't know.
Could be 3 months from now. But we'll see. 12-6 is on Roach Pitbull. That's PPV.com. Some other wins before we say goodbye. Some Guido Villanelli comeback win.
My boy Guido.
Awesome. Like him a lot. Awesome.
I like him a lot. He's a good dude, and he is fun to watch, and he's really coming into his own.
Yeah, lost to Richard Torres. Who cares? It's heavyweight boxing. Entertain us. Speaking of, are you not entertained? He calls out AJ at the Roman Coliseum.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool move. And he, you know his nickname is the Gladiator, right?
Because he's born in Rome.
Yeah, and good athlete. A former high-level tennis player, big guy, very athletic. I dealt with him a lot during. I guess it was during the bubble for Top Rank because he had a couple fights over there. But very athletic, big, strong, heavyweight. His team are awesome. They're really cool, nice people. Hell of a fight. Hell of a fight last night. He seemed like he was getting tuned up in there a little bit, getting hit with clean shots. He looked like he was kind of discouraged after round two. He was going back to his corner. I was like, oh no, because I turned it on. I missed round one, and turned it on in the middle of round two, and I'm watching him walk back to the corner. I'm like, oh man, Guido. And then round three, he comes out and he's just like, whatever. I'm just throwing right hands, just bombs.
Yeah.
And the Canadian couldn't take it. Hadn't been in deep water. Absolutely.
There's a market for that, Guido. It's heavyweights. You have a loss, big deal. Like, if you can be like a, not to say he's a gaudy type, but like, exactly. Like, you're about to lose. Like, think about what was going through his mind. Like, he's about to lose back-to-back fights and potentially be out of the sport or on a real dark path back to bigger paydays. And he knocks the guy out in the next couple rounds. And now he's calling out AJ. Too.
Yeah. An undefeated fighter, and he was the B-side. So,
and now he's calling out AJ, and I don't think he'll get that fight. I mean, everyone's calling out AJ. Like, I wonder how Joshua looks at this. They see a big money fighter in a wounded, winnable fight. Everyone's calling out AJ. Even Makhmadov called him out.
It's going to be Makhmadov, I guarantee it. Because he is. I think so. I think.
How the heck did he beat Dave Allen?
That's exactly right. But we love Dave Allen. He's one of those guys. He's just like hero, Gotti type figure.
He's a hero.
Yeah, and yeah, it's gonna be him because they had mentioned that. Apparently, I saw somewhere that he had DM'd Joshua or Joshua DM'd him. I don't know how real that is, but it's a super winnable fight for Joshua. I think
what does Joshua get out of that?
Super limited. A win. A KO.
Okay, then I want to see him fight Fury.
And he's back! And then Fury. Yeah, that fight's happening.
Joshua
Fury fight's happening. And I've been saying this for a year. That fight will happen. Tyson is not staying retired. He's coming back and he's fighting Joshua. That fight is just way too big.
You gotta. Dave Allen, the white rhino, 24-8. 19 wins by KO, 4 losses by knockout. 2 draws. He got the colorful, I like to say this, a colorful box rec. There's green, there's red, and there's blue.
Yeah, well, again, Eddie Hearn promoting very well.
Oh last God,
night. Was talking about David Allen and what he can do, and you know he was applauding him for his performance.
He said he was virtually unrecognizable in the lead up because he was in such good shape, and then someone posted a picture. And this is no slight to Dave Allen, huge gut,
Bigger than ever. Bigger than ever.
He's yeah, always got a really big guy. Is like scary looking Frankenstein, has like the twitch that was like horrifying and like
yeah, but he can't fight.
Can't fight. Straight up, he looked horrible against Guido.
Guido destroyed. I called that fight. Guido was vicious that night. He made Guido,
Guido was
look
too
like
athletic
killer.
For him.
Yeah, too athletic, hit too hard. He's too straight up. He gets hit too much. I actually thought David Allen was going to win that fight. But that's a perfect fight for Joshua. Joshua is going to ice him in three rounds. Big right hand. The guy doesn't move his head.
Hmm. That's it for our episode. Hopefully we get Boots Ennis. This
Boots
October's
and
looking...
Boots and Ortiz, buddy. Boots
what
Ortiz.
The frig is wrong with me?
Dude. you're
sorry, everyone.
You're a special one, Dan.
What is wrong?
Speaks on camera for a living, this man. Guys, this is his, this man's career. Speaks on camera for a living. God bless.
Horrible.
God bless America. God bless
America. Anyone can do it. Anyone can do it, everybody. For all the kids out there, you don't got to speak good. You got to speak good at all.
You ain't got to be speak good at all. You can, and you can talk for a living.
Get right to the top.
Yeah.
Especially in boxing. Yeah, that's
Wild, Wild West. Wild, Wild
I got
West.
No more words. And protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs.
Let's get Dan Goodbye. Out of the story.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.